Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, April 29th, 2017. This is episode 1384. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Capterra helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories from accounting to workflow management. Visit capterra.com/twit to start your free search today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. Well, you can still call us. You just still have to call via Skype, via some sort of voice over the internet to reach us. 888-827-5536. You know where that is? And all the other information you need, answers to questions, links and so forth, and including a link to our great chat room. You know where that is? I'll tell you where that is. That's on the website. Of course, that's where you put it, right? And that there website is techguylabs.com. No sign up, no fee, just wide open. Like leaving the front door open. Just come on in. Take what you want. Leave the rest. Techguylabs.com. I mentioned that so you don't have to go crazy writing stuff down. This was a big week for quarterly results. I don't know. This is not a stock investment show or a business show, so I don't. Quarterly results don't mean that much to me in terms of how a company's doing financially. But it tells you a little bit about what the company's business is and where the company's going to be looking in the future. For instance, Microsoft. You know, they had a great quarter when it comes to the cloud. The puffy stuff was great. In fact, a lot of companies did. Cloud earnings were huge for Microsoft and Amazon and Google's parent company, Alphabet. Microsoft did not do so well, though, in the hardware category. You know, they make actually quite nice laptops. In fact, I often feel guilty because I forget to mention that Microsoft sells Windows laptops, the Surface Pro, which is quite good. It's a weird laptop. It's a laptop that is mostly really a tablet with a kind of a suede keyboard attached, kind of a floppy little keyboard. But people like it. People like it. So that's the Surface Pro. And then they make the Surface Book, which is a more traditional laptop, except for the weirdo hinge. And it has a weirdo hinge because it has a detachable tablet too. Microsoft continues its kind of pursuit of tablet perfection, even though their research must tell them it's huge. It must tell them everybody wants to be able to tear the screen off their laptop, put it in their lap. Except I don't see people doing that often. Maybe on a factory floor, or I don't know. Do you see people using their laptop even at a coffee shop? Or I don't see him just walking around with the tablet part. Anyway, Microsoft's all in on that. The one thing they make without a tablet is Surface Studio, which is really cool. I have one of those. I have both a Surface Book and a Surface Studio. I don't have a Surface Pro. But the Surface Studio is cool because it's the idea of the Surface Studio is it's an all-in-one, like an iMac, but the screen folds down to 20 degrees like a drafting table. And it's, you know, all of Microsoft stuff has touch and pencil stuff. It doesn't matter because it didn't do that well. I don't even know why I'm talking about it. The hardware was not a big thing for them, oddly enough. And oddly enough, hardware was really big for Google. Now, it wasn't their biggest business, but Google's advertising business is still the big business. It's a huge business for them. But interestingly, I think for the first time, really, they made a lot of money on their Pixel phones. And they remember they did the Google Home thing? they're trying to get beyond, you know, expand beyond just being a, you know, search and sales, you know, advertising organization. Although, if you look at the numbers, advertising revenue increased 18% in the quarter, in 3 months, to, get this, $21.1 billion. That's the amount of money they sold. Profit rose 29%. They made $5.43 billion in advertising. That's not bad. Nice. Almost $1 billion a month. No, wait a minute. Almost $2 billion a month. Meanwhile, the hardware stuff revenue is $3 billion in 4 months. And they don't, I don't know if they said what the profit was, but it went up 49%. And I guess that's the point, is that for the Google's phones, for some reason, are doing a bang up business, and Microsoft's laptops aren't. Oh, why? Well, because people are buying phones instead of laptops, I guess. That might explain why Microsoft thought tablets would be huge, except they're not. Surface revenue is lower than expected in the latest quarter. But Amazon did nicely. Amazon did very well with the cloud. Amazon's the king of the cloud. Did you know that Amazon was the king of the cloud? You might have thought Amazon was the king of the laundry detergent, diapers, and books, but no. Amazon's much more than a store. Amazon is, it's not. I mean, Google, what did we say? Google made almost $2 billion a month. Amazon in 3 months made $724 million in profit. It's an increase. But remember, Amazon, the guy who runs Amazon, Jeff Bezos, he has a knob in his office that he can turn. It's called profit. And sometimes he turns it up, sometimes he turns it down. In fact, famously, for 10 years, investors were getting mad at Jeff. They said, you're not making a profit. For 10 years, he made no profit. He said, well, I'm investing in the business. No, you're not making a profit. Finally, he couldn't even raise more money. He had to go borrow money. And then he made a profit because all of those fulfillment centers he built turned out to be pretty hot stuff. They helped him make a great business. But Amazon Web Services, $3.66 billion in revenue. Pretty good. Microsoft has its cloud business. They call that Azure because, you know, the sky is blue and blue means Azure. Azure means blue in a language nobody speaks or something. I don't, it's like at least Latin, Azure. It's English. It's a color, but nobody knows how to say it. Azure? Azure? I don't know. It's a terrible name. Microsoft's not good at naming. Not really. But anyway, Azure, or Azure, grew 93%, almost doubled from year over year. That's pretty good. And the Office software grew by 45%, Office 365. They don't sell that in a box anymore, right? You have to rent it. You have to rent it. Good news for people who want to delete Uber. Now you can. Uber, yeah, Uber's always in the news. Every week there's another scandal or something Uber did that was dumb. Last week they got in trouble with Apple, or we found out that they had gotten in trouble with Apple earlier because they were doing something illegal with the app in the App Store. It's not allowed, I guess, in the App Store if you're an Apple app. To uniquely identify your users, you know, find out what the phone serial number is. You can do it, apparently. Apple didn't close that door. Well, I guess because Apple wants to be able to do it, but they're not allowed to do it, and they didn't want to get caught. So they wrote in the software, "Hey, if you're in Cupertino, pretend you don't do this." Literally, they. But what they didn't realize is that Apple's in more than just Cupertino. Yeah. So Apple found out. Instead of kicking Uber out of the App Store, that's what they would have done with anybody else. They called Uber CEO Travis Kalanick onto the carpet. They brought him into Cupertino. My app doesn't work here. They brought him into Cupertino, and Tim Cook said, "Now, Travis, you know what you did." "Yes, sir." "You're not going to do that anymore, are you?" "No, sir." "All right. You're on double secret probation." And then that's all that we... And they didn't even... What they should have said is, "We'll let you stay in there, but you got to tell people what you did, what you're doing." But no. They just... "No, you're just on double secret probation." Anyway, the Delete Uber movement continues on Twitter, hashtag Delete Uber, because of all of this. And so now you can. You can actually, instead of, you used to have to call Uber to cancel your account. Now you can do it in the app. They also have better privacy. Well, it's about time. Hey, let's take some calls. What do you say? 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Double super secret probation for you, Uber. That was handy. I did what nobody does. I was using my tablet, like a tablet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, when I find myself in times of trouble, it's actually Mother Heather I call on. She comes to me speaking words of wisdom. Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Hello, Heather.
Hey.
You know, in years past, you have had to struggle on this day to park because normally you used to be downtown, and this is Petaluma's finest hour right now. We're in the small town of Northern California called Petaluma. It's famous for it was the chicken capital of Northern California for years. And you know what goes with chickens?
Cock-a-doodle-doo?
No. Several things, and I know where your mind's going, but I'm thinking eggs. So yeah. This was the egg capital of actually really probably the whole West for a long time. And then that was in the turn of the last century, 1900. And then became dairy. So we celebrate this each year with the famous Butter and Eggs Day going on right now. And you would normally be struggling to find a parking place right now. Instead, you just pulled right up front, got out of your fancy car.
Got my spot in the shade.
Yeah.
Didn't have to drive up the hill. Whoops.
So we're all in a good mood today because we aren't downtown. But if you're in the area, this is a good day to be in Petaluma. Anyway.
Yeah. A little more traffic on the freeway, too.
Oh, I bet. Yeah,
people coming up. Streaming into Petaluma to score some butter and eggs.
Butter and eggs. Nothing like it.
And the cheese.
They crowned the dairy princess today.
Forgot to put my self into the running.
For many years, our good friend Cammy Blackstone attempted to win the approval of the Dairy Council and become Dairy Princess, but she didn't grow up on a dairy farm, and that really counted against her. They kind of expect you to know dairy if you're going to be the Dairy Princess.
I wonder if being from Iowa gives me any cred around.
Yeah, Iowa's good.
Corn-fed gal.
Yeah, our new quarterback comes from Iowa, too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they just drafted a guy. Anyway, enough of that. You see, we're talking about everything but the real cause of the day, which is technology.
The issues at hand.
The issue at hand and how to get more better at it. So I'm not more better at grammar, but I am more better at technology. Can you tell me who I should talk to? I know you've been lining up the calls.
Yeah, let's help Alan in Honolulu, the only place better than Petaluma, get mo better at technology.
Oh, Alan, get mo better. Thank you, Heather. Hello, Alan. Welcome.
Aloha. Good morning, Leo.
Aloha.
Hey, I have a question, a tech question on text messaging that I need your help on.
Okay.
I wanted to share a comment with you on millennials not knowing how to use computers. You know, I listen to you all the time and how everything, like you said, is migrating to smartphones.
Right.
And it's creating a problem because we own some retail stores that use a window-based POS system.
Oh, point of sale. Yeah.
A point of sale system.
Yeah.
For those who
like
don't know.
Instead of a cash register.
Exactly. And, you know, computers aren't perfect, and sometimes they freeze up or whatever, and you have to reboot a computer.
They don't know how, do they?
No. I had one guy who's 30 years old, and I said to him, you know, he tried to... Whatever, I said, look, finally go down to the tower and just hold in the power button until it turns off. You know, he tried it five or six times, said it's just not working. It turned out he was turning on and off the monitor power.
He didn't know, had no idea that wasn't the computer. He thought the monitor was everything.
And I think that's creating a real problem. There's a real disconnect in that age group because everything is moving to smartphones.
Right.
They have no idea how to use a computer. But that was my comment I wanted to share with you this morning.
Yeah.
But here is my tech question. I also am a Little League baseball coach.
Oh, nice.
And thank you. And so one of the things I do is I have a group text that goes out to all the parents in case there's, you know, a rain day or a change in schedule.
Let me guess.
And
you're on an iPhone.
No, opposite.
Oh, good.
I'm on Android.
Okay. Because if you're on an iPhone, you can't group text people who are on Android, which is really silly.
Oh, here's mine goes the opposite way. I'm an Android guy, and every one of my parents gets the text message except one who is on an iPhone.
Yeah. He should get it. That's not so. It's a one way street. Apple doesn't support group messaging to Android, but Android supports group messaging. What messaging program are you using?
I'm using the standard.
The one that came with the phone.
Yeah.
Well, who made your phone?
I have a Samsung.
Samsung. So using Samsung's messaging. So this is one of the things that's confusing about Android. There are about 20 different ways to send text messages. It's very frustrating. And Samsung makes their own messaging app. Google makes their own messaging app, Android Messages. There's also Hangouts. Google makes that, which does group messaging, but doesn't do SMS unless you're a Google Fi subscriber, their phone service. Then there's other programs like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and Signal, and I can go on and on and on. And most of those can be used for SMS messaging as well. But the fact that you're getting this group message out tells me everything's fine. Everybody's getting it but this one guy. Can you send him an individual text?
If I individually text her, she gets it. She can text me back. There's no problem there. Okay. But she will never, ever get the group message.
So that's because you have other iPhone users in the I'm sure on the team.
Right. And that's why I figured you and the guys in the messaging group they would know somewhere there's a setting somewhere this person has wrong in their phone.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't think so. Why can't she get group messages? It might be in fact that she's got group messaging somehow disabled. You only can go so far in diagnosing this with her, obviously, but you might ask her, do you get group messages from anybody else? That's something it's not a limitation of what you're using of the Samsung Messenger. I think she's got a setting in her iPhone that is blocking the group messaging. One of the things that did happen, I know what this might be. The defaults, by the way, are to get the message. And that's why most of the people can get it. She has changed the settings in her phone. It may be that she did this. There was a short period of time where we were telling people to disable auto reception of MMS. To do group messaging, you can't use the simple message system or SMS. You have to use a related one called MMS, which is multimedia message system. Your phone does it automatically when you do a group message, and most people receive MMS automatically. She may have disabled that as a security measure and forgotten to re-enable it.
So that's going to be in the general settings.
It's in her cellular settings. It might actually be in the messages. It's probably in the messages settings. So have her look at that. The other thing is, of course, verify that you've got her correctly in the group.
In fact, I have from her contact, I've even deleted her contact.
Oh, okay.
Confirmed everything and put her back into the group.
Yeah, I bet you she's disabled MMS messaging. I was advising people to do that for it must have been a week or two, because there was a very, there was a flaw that could cause, somebody could send you a malformed MMS message that would crash your iPhone. And I bet you she did that. I bet you she did that. So ask her about to look at her messages settings and make sure MMS, not group messaging, but MMS is enabled. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I bet you that's what happened. What do you think? Is that what happened, chat room? It's time once again for magic music, which can indicate only one thing, the approach of Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. I see him coming, giant screen under his arm. Hello, Scott Wilkinson. Good to see you. He's here from the Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG, and, of course, from his day job, the AVS Forum, where he's editor-in-chief. So I had to buy a new TV for Lisa.
Uh-oh. What'd you get?
For her little office there.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I want 55 inches. I want to mount it to the wall.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spend a lot of money. I got a Vizio M
series. M series. Excellent.
2017 M series looks pretty good.
Oh, man.
And it wasn't expensive.
No. This is the beauty thing about Vizio. They do remarkable job for the money.
I was a little worried because they were about to be purchased by a big Chinese company, Leeco.
Yep.
And
yep.
then Leeco or Leeco.
Leeco is how it's pronounced, yeah. It's
L. Weird. You tell me, kids. L-E-E-C-O. It sounds like Leeco to me.
Except that the first E is lowercase yeah, and that, the second yeah. E is uppercase.
Is it owned by Mr. Lee?
I don't know.
I bet it is.
No, no, it's not a Lee. It's
not French.
As in French.
It's not French. Leeco is not French.
No, they made their name sound kind of French.
You might as well say Le TV. Actually, that is French.
Do.
Yeah, they call it Le TV.
Well, they call it Le Phone, I think, or Le.
Oh, please,
they put the L-E in front of just about everything. And it's weird. It does sound like a French name, but it's a Chinese company. And
yeah.
they had said a long time, months ago, yeah, we're going to buy Vizio for something like $2 or $4 billion. It fell through. I don't know exactly what happened, but they announced, you know what? Never mind.
I'm relieved, frankly, because Vizio, which is, by the way, while it's made in China, everything's made in China, is an American company, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
Southern California. They're in Southern California.
They're based in Southern California.
Kind of hard nowadays. What does that mean, right?
Yeah, right. I
if
mean,
it's,
in
if it's
the
made
global
in China,
economy, so to speak, you know, they can be anywhere. But they really do make an excellent product for the money. And the M series, which is a step down from more or less the flagship P series, is remarkable.
Yeah, I love her, but I wasn't getting her a P. No, she told me not to spend so much money. But this was well under $1,000. It wasn't very expensive.
For a 55-inch and high dynamic range.
Yes, it's a 4K UHD.
Yeah.
It's got, what do you call that LED lighting that's...
It's called Full Array Local Dimming, or FALD, F-A-L-D.
Yeah, that.
So what it means is that a lot of LCD TVs these days have their LED illumination, their backlight, so to speak, along the edge of the screen. That's called edge lighting. And it's okay, but it causes problems like poor uniformity of the image. Whereas if you have a full array of LEDs behind the LCD panel itself, then it's a much more uniform, and you have the opportunity of, the manufacturer does, of identifying smaller zones that can be brightened or dimmed independently, depending on, hey, that part of the picture is supposed to be bright, so we'll fire up those LEDs, and that part of the picture is supposed to be dim, so we'll dim back those LEDs. It's a much better technology than edge lighting, in my opinion, and Vizio has gone all in with it. It's the only company I know of where virtually all of its TVs are FALD, have a full array local dimming backlight, which is just a better performer, in my opinion. Now, I will say that in addition, the how much better it is depends on how many zones of these little zones that can be brightened and dimmed independently. How many of those are there behind the screen? The P series has 128. The M series has 64. So, you know, more is better in this case, but 64 ain't bad. So I think the M series is a serious bargain. I mean, a serious value, I should really
say. Yeah, she didn't want, we have better TV. We have the, you know, the fancy LG.
Oh, you have the LG OLED at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is for her home office.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this would be good.
Oh, it's great.
Okay.
Fantastic. Great job.
You have to consider, you know, I guess you have to kind of consider the application.
You do. For example, if she's going to watch TV in her office with the lights on,
which she is,
I'm sure, then she's going to need a brighter TV, and that really means an LCD TV, which, generally speaking, LCD TVs can get a lot brighter than OLEDs can. I just reviewed, in fact, did a first look anyway of the new Sony OLED, which is the first company other than LG to bring out a big screen OLED into the consumer market.
Sony's back, baby.
Sony is back, baby.
Because they
right.
make great TVs, didn't they, for
they
years?
Do. They do.
And they still do. They still do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like
are they Bravias?
Yeah, that's their sort of overarching brand name, just like let's see, Bravia. Oh, I can't think of the other ones off the top of my head, but some company. Oh, Sharp had Aquos. Remember that?
Right.
So there are these
most companies like Vizio. They have a letter and numbers.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But Sony's always liked having, you know, the Grand Vega. Remember that?
Yeah, exactly. I remember the Grand Vega spelled W.
With a W because
I know.
Why not?
But that's how they pronounced
it. Right.
Anyway, the Sony OLED is wonderful, but the 55-inch is like $4,000.
Yeah, wow.
And it gets up to – the point I was going to make was that its peak brightness in HDR, high dynamic range, is about almost 700 nits or candelas per meter squared. This is a measure of how bright it is. LCDs can easily get twice that and more. So if you're in a bright room, then an LCD is probably the way you should be thinking. If you have a more light-controlled room, such as your – room where you have your LG OLED.
Yeah, yeah.
Then an OLED is perfectly fine.
That's the home theater, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Now, OLED is also more expensive, as
yes,
you can see.
This was only $700 or $800. It was.
$700 or $800 for a 55-inch.
Yeah.
High dynamic range, 4K, streaming, lots of smart TV features.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, that was the other thing, because we're thinking, we'll see how this goes, of becoming cord cutters.
Ooh,
which means eliminating cable.
Yep, and satellite.
We'll obviously have to have some sort of internet. Might be from the cable company, so you know, there's that.
Yeah.
And then looking at something like you know, Google's new YouTube TV has our local channels on it.
Mm-hmm.
Only in five markets, but in LA, San Francisco, I think I can't remember the others. Dallas, it mm-hmm. can get the locals.
Right.
So.
And this is a new thing coming
along.
That's
$35 a month. And then $15 a month for HBO, that's $40, $50. And then $15 for Showtime, that's $45. Pretty soon it adds up.
Pretty soon it adds up. Yeah, exactly right.
But I wanted her to have a smart TV so that she could Chromecast and do those, mm-hmm. you know, do those other things. So.
Which the Vizio is all over Chromecast.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Now, when they say cast capable, is that Chromecast?
Yeah, in their case, it is Chromecast, what used to be Google Cast.
Yeah.
And that's kind of confusing because there is a device called a Chromecast as well.
Which Google sells and plugs into the back of the TV.
Exactly, and it's a little streaming box.
That's $35. I could buy one of those.
Yeah,
I guess
or more $60 for the 4K Ultra HD and high dynamic range one, which I just got and I'm about to start looking at. I think it should be really great.
Well, when the time comes, I will come to you.
Please do.
And ask you for your – are you a cord cutter? No, you get channels.
No, I have satellite.
Yeah. And then you live in a metro. We are so far from the metro, we can't get over-the-air signals.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. So, but that's fine. I figured out how we can get around it. Anyway, I was thinking of doing that this summer as an experiment.
Cool. I'll
and also see how loud the teenager screams. That's always fun. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek. You'll find his podcast at our podcast network, twit.tv/HTG. He's also at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and joins us each week right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There is not Chromecast on the LG OLED, but I added the $60 4K Chromecast to it.
Oh, all you right. did? Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, there,
in fact,
there you go.
I told you, I had to upgrade everything to 4K. Nothing worked.
That's right.
New receiver, new everything. All right, let us arrange this, and it's all yours.
Thank you. And I'm happy to stick around for the top of the hour.
Oh, bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Web 7789 says, 65-inch model available, price? Are you talking about the M series or the Sony OLED? That would be my question for that. They are both available. The 65-inch OLED is $6,000. The 65-inch M series, I haven't looked lately, but I could easily do that. So I'm going to try and find out what that is. Vizio M series. Let's see here. 55-inch. No, I want a 65.
You know, they could probably Google that for themselves now, Scott.
Well, you know they could. It's true. Well, I'm seeing $1,300-$1,400. That's what I'm looking at. So, you know, you spent what, $700, $800?
Yeah. I can't remember exactly. Something
like that. So I wouldn't be surprised. The 65-inch would be a little over $1,000. In the P series, the 55 is $1,000. They have a 60, I believe, which is $1,500, and a 65 is $2,000.
What am I not getting by going M instead of P?
You're getting fewer local dimming zones is basically it. And that, depending on the content, you know, if you have a very small area of really brightness in one of those zones, then when the M series zone lights up to get that high brightness in there, you'll see some haloing around it. In other words, the more zones you have, and by extension, the smaller those zones are, the less haloing you will see on certain types of content. But I don't think it's really a big deal. Certainly in your case, with, you know, an office TV, there's absolutely no reason to spend
the extra. She just wants to watch the Niners.
Yeah, well, there you go. That won't be a problem because it's all bright, right? Watching a football game is during the day anyway.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to watch a movie. We'll watch it in the other room, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, let me put it this way. I hope she's not listening right now because I love her dearly.
Mm.
I went into the gym this morning and she's watching Homeland, which she's catching up on. I've seen already. I said, honey, doesn't that picture look funny to you? It's all zoomed and stretched. You're watching the SD version.
Oh, man.
She said, I can't tell it. It's fine. I'm not really paying attention. I said, honey, there's an HD version on this thing.
Right.
Oh, she is listening. She just texted me. Sorry. But I'm just saying that if that's fine. If she doesn't care that, you know, for
if
something like
care,
that, she's going to love this Vizio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably looks great in SD.
Well, I would certainly go look for HD or UHD content.
Yeah. There's too many clicks. It's too many clicks.
Too many clicks.
And she, you know, she's doing other stuff while she's watching it. She's, you know, she's working out. So she's the picture. But that's kind of what it'll be like in her office, too, I'm sure. You know,
right. What TV do you have in the gym? Some old funky thing?
Yeah, that old Samsung OLED that I bought a couple of years ago.
Oh, the curved one?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a good TV.
It's 1080p, I think,
it's
right?
It's a good TV. It's not 4K. It's a good TV, but it got replaced, right? So it went to the gym.
Right.
All right. You're going to hang around for the top?
Yep, happy to.
Thank you, my friend. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Steve in Woodland Hills. Hello, Steve. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. Long-time listener. Second-time caller.
All right.
Pleasure to speak again.
Starting to rack up the numbers here.
There you go, buddy. I manage a 20-year mom-and-pop shop in Southern California. And this year, I was given a $5,000 to $10,000 per month advertising budget to expand clientele, obviously closer to 5,000, but whatever works. We're going after 30 to 50-year-olds in Southern California, but we could do some extending in California, no other state.
My good friend Robin Bertolucci, program director at KFI, would tell me, you should look to KFI for your advertising. They are very strong in 30 to 50-year-old men. However, I know you're calling the tech guy because you're interested in digital advertising.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. Now, our budget includes money for SEO, Google, pay-per-click, Bing, which I happen to recommend a lot of money.
These are all different things. So SEO is the notion that you can improve your traffic on your website by search engine optimization. There's truth to this, but there's also a lot of snake oil, and it's very easy to waste much more than $5,000 a month on SEO. So what SEO does when it's well done will help you with the very fundamental basics of making sure your site conforms to Google's, you know, policies and ranks as high as it can with Google. But if an SEO promises you things like, we're going to get you to number one in the search results, walk, maybe run away. Because no one can promise that. No one can do that. SEO can help you but not make a huge difference. I would separate your SEO budget from your ad budget. They're two different things. SEO means you're going to rank higher in the rankings. Your ad budget is designed to get more traffic to your website. Is that correct?
Yes, that okay. is correct.
So I wouldn't waste a lot of money on Bing, only because Bing is, look at the market share of Bing compared to Google. Your Google ads are going to hit more of your potential audience. Now, if you think that the age group you're targeting is going to be more likely to use Bing, then, you know, and it might, because it's an older age group, less sophisticated, they might be using Windows and Bing is the default search engine. So that may happen. I'll tell you what I would, if for my money, I would look to what happened in the recent presidential campaign, where the Republican candidate was outspent by the Democratic candidate almost 10-1. But the Republican candidate, I'm not naming names because I don't want to make this about politics. The Republican candidate used Facebook very, very effectively and very, very efficiently. And one of the things you can do with Facebook is you can go to them and say, I want a 55-year-old man within a 5-mile radius of my mom and pop shop. And you can get it. You can highly target it. You can even target, and this is what the Republicans did very effectively, the ads to the point where you understand more about that person and give them an ad that fits their mood, their personality, their interests. So as an example, the Trump campaign was running ads both to encourage prospective voters and discourage people who would vote for the other side. And they were targeting ads at people based on demographic information provided to them by Facebook. Facebook knows a lot, including political affiliation, about everybody. If you've ever taken a Facebook quiz, who hasn't? Everybody has, right? Don't. The point of the Facebook quiz is not to find out which Game of Thrones character you are. The point of the quiz is to gather demographic information about you. As soon as you give the quiz permission, you give them access to your profile, your friends' profiles. It is a very effective tool used by a company, among others, in Britain called Cambridge Analytica, which was hired. Actually, Donald Trump delegated to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, this job. He set up an operation in San Antonio that was entirely dedicated to Facebook advertising buys, and it was amazingly effective. And I think this exact same technique is very valuable for... do you have a mailing list, for instance?
Yes, we do, but I do want to ask you...
Let me give you... And then you can ask anything you want. One of the things you can do to Facebook is you can give them your mailing list and say, look, these people are already our prime customers. They subscribe to our mailing list. Do you have another 5,000 people who demographically match this group, who in interests match this group, who would be most likely devoted customers if they knew about our business? And Facebook will put your ads in front of those people. That's the kind of targeting no one else can do. And that's why Facebook is getting the lion's share of advertising right now. They're growing so fast. You heard me talk at the beginning there about Google growing 18%. Facebook's growing twice that rate. Okay, now go ahead, ask a question.
Thank you very much. Out of the percentage of my budget, and of course I said my budget is 5 to 10 grand a month, what percentage of that should be paid to the company that's managing my advertising and marketing? That's one. Two, should that company also be entitled to a percentage of the amount of money I pay Facebook or Google? And last but not least, three, on the Google pay per click, you can target very specific words that cost more or target more words that cost less.
Yeah, they do an auction. So the most popular words, if you want to buy a lawyer, that's very expensive because it's the most popular. So Google's not dumb. Google actually has an auction system set up for pricing. That way it doesn't have to set a price. You know, the problem with pricing is if you're making it up, you don't know if could you charge more? Should you charge less? But when you do an auction, you charge exactly what the market will bear. So Google's not dumb. So it's very straightforward. You spend what you spend. And if you buy a word that's 1/10 as expensive, it will be almost exactly 1/10 as effective. Sometimes there's tricks there. And that's where hiring somebody to do this for you might be a smart move. You will give them a commission. And I don't know what those commissions are. My guess would be they range at the very lowest to 10 to 15% and at the highest 40 to 50%, somewhere in that range. Because you're paying them to know, and that's why you have to find somebody good, the ins and outs of this. Somebody good will know when to use Facebook, when to use Google, when to use Bing. I wouldn't tell them. You have a very small, relatively small budget. It's a lot for a mom and pop, right? But advertising, it's a small budget. So you're going to give up some of that to somebody who's going to make your buy more efficient because of their expertise. And I think that's probably worth it. You want to find somebody who really knows what they're doing, though. And part of the problem with doing that is what worked 5 years ago does not work today. We learned something in the election. Donald Trump's team knew something in the election that Hillary Clinton's team did not know and used it to great effect. So this is constantly changing, and for somebody to be an expert at this makes them very, very valuable. It makes your ad dollar go a lot farther. So you're going to probably want to pay somebody. The interesting thing is, if you want to learn about it, you might be able to do a better job, frankly, if you just go out and spend some time learning about it. People pay somebody to do it because they don't have the time or the energy or the inclination to learn it. I think you can learn it because this stuff is changing every month, every minute, something new. I think it's really interesting. And there are lots of books out there, but again, because of the lead time with books, a lot of times they're out of date. There are websites like Search Engine Land, which is run by a friend of mine, Danny Sullivan. It's a site for SEOs and people who want to understand search engine. He also runs Marketing Engine Land. Those are great resources for day-to-day information. Google's a great information itself. It has a lot of information about buying AdSense and AdWords, although it's going to be a little bit self-serving. Facebook also a great resource. I'm very curious, this is an art. It's a science, but it's also an art. And I think I'm very curious how you do with it. So stay in touch. I'd love to hear how it works for you, Steve. And I think if done right, $5,000 can go a long way. Let's put it this way. It should easily pay for itself several times over if you do it right. Easily generate four times that amount of business, I would guess. We live in a very interesting time. And, of course, buy some ads on KFI, our local affiliate in your area. They're good, too. Very effective. Very effective. 8888-ASK-YOU. I would bet now, I'm not sure, but I would bet now that a good sales consultant at a radio station would know a lot about how to use your budget in general, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I'm going to hand it back over to your friend and mine, Mr. Scotiverus Wilkinsonian.
Is that my Latin name?
Scotiverus, yes. King of the Sackbutt.
King of the Sackbutt. Hey, indeed. I was going to maybe go out to the fair again and play some Sackbutt with my buddies.
I think they closed our local Renaissance Fair. It used to be up here at Black Point, and I don't see it anymore.
Well, no, they moved it. It's now out at Casa de Fruta.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of far for you.
But, yeah, it's a bit of a drive. But
it was much nicer at Black Point. Oh, man, I used to play the Black Point Fair all the time, and it was so good.
I really enjoyed it. That was in the heyday. The Renaissance, if you will, of the Renaissance Fair.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. No, now it used to be in, I think, Vallejo for a while. And then it's out past Watsonville on Highway 152, Casa de Fruta. Do you know? Have you ever been there? Oh, I guess Leo went to do something else. A jamming man. Man after my own heart. I'm a jamming man, too. I mentioned last week my preference between the Sony X900E and the Samsung MU8000. But I got cut off. Could I elaborate? Well, I haven't really seen either of them in a critical environment. So it's difficult for me to say. Generally speaking, I really like Sony's processing. So they're both edge lit, which I was talking about earlier, edge lighting, which is where the LEDs are on the edge of the screen. I prefer FALD, full array local dimming, much more than edge lighting. And both of these are edge lit, so I'm not that keen on either of them. They're both about the same in terms of high dynamic range performance. They'll do HDR10, but they won't do anything else, I think. The Sony 900E does not have their super-duper top-of-the-line X1 Extreme processor. So they can't do Dolby Vision. I don't think they'll even get an upgrade to HLG. They might. Samsung certainly only does HDR10. But the interesting thing hit with Samsung is they just announced that I believe the MU series is going to have the next generation of HDR10 called HDR10 Plus. And HDR10 Plus adds what's called dynamic metadata. And this is very important, and it's why Dolby Vision, why I strongly prefer Dolby Vision, because metadata basically tells the display, it's packaged along with the video information, and it tells the display what was the peak luminance that this content was mastered to. This is the problem with HDR, high dynamic range. Now, how it gets mastered is not universally the same, and how it gets displayed isn't universally the same. So there's this metadata that tells the display, that's embedded in the content, tells the display, here's how I was mastered. With HDR10, you only get one piece of metadata for the entire program. If it's a two-hour movie, you get one piece of metadata, two pieces actually. One says, this was the maximum brightness throughout the entire movie. And the other one says, this was the average brightness throughout the entire movie. Well, okay, that's great. But different scenes have different requirements. And so what Dolby Vision does, that's called static metadata, by the way. Dynamic metadata includes metadata that says, this is the maximum brightness it was. This was the average brightness. That can do it per scene or even per frame. Now, it's a lot more data going through, but it gives you a much more accurate representation of what the scene and what each scene and even each frame is supposed to look like. Well, HDR10 has only static metadata. Dolby Vision has dynamic. Now, Samsung has introduced HDR10 Plus, which adds dynamic metadata to HDR10, which is a big deal. So I would have to say, because of that, I would then lead towards the Samsung. Because the MU series doesn't have it quite yet. The Q series does. Their flagship series has HDR10 Plus now, but the MU series doesn't. Now, I have to be very clear about this. HDR10 Plus, with its dynamic metadata, is only available on the Samsung TV via its internal streaming apps. And the only streaming provider that is doing it or will do it so far announced is Amazon Instant Video. So you're not going to see the benefit of it except from Amazon. plus, it can't be transmitted over HDMI until we have HDMI 2.1, which was announced, but it has not been released yet. And there are no TVs or any other devices that implement it because there are no chips. Because the spec isn't done yet. It's almost done. And in fact, as soon as it is done, I will have one of the HDMI guys on my podcast to talk about it. But they want to wait until it's actually released. The spec is final, released, ready to go, so we can talk about it. But what it does, one of the things HDMI 2.1 does is it increases the bandwidth, the bit rate at which data can flow through the cable, which is required for HDR10 Plus, for this dynamic metadata over HDR10. Now, what's really interesting is that Dolby Vision, which also uses dynamic metadata, does not require HDMI 2.1. You can send it along HDMI 2.0 or even possibly 1.4, older forms of HDMI. Because the metadata is embedded in a different way, and it does not require as much bandwidth. So I find that very interesting. Neither of the TVs you talked about, though, do Dolby Vision. And I really like Dolby Vision. So to get dynamic metadata using the current HDMI standard that TVs now have, and Ultra HD Blu-ray players and streaming boxes and so on, you need to get a TV that will support it, and neither of those TVs will support it. So that was kind of a long meandering thing around it. Steve P. said he looked at the Sony X900. Oh, damn, the thing. My chat room just jumped and I can't find it anymore. CO Bra says, basically, I'm saying just get a TV that'll do both HDR10 and Dolby Vision. That's what I'm saying. to put it succinctly, that's exactly what I'm saying. I would prefer to get a TV with as many HDR formats implemented as possible, because I see them exactly like I do the audio formats, like Dolby Digital, DTS, DTSX.
That's
Dolby
Hamilton Apple. Era. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I turned on the mic.
Oh, you turned on the mic.
Yes,
that's fine.
I'm getting ready.
Anyway, I prefer that, because then you can take care of, you can display whatever comes its way. That's what I'm saying.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte's here, the tech guy. Yes, I am the answer to all your technology woes. Well, not really. I'll do my best, though. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call us. Just use Skype. 888-827-5536. Website, techguylabs.com. I mention that because everything I talk about on the show ends up there eventually. James, I think, is traveling this morning, but I think he might be working on the notes now. Anyway, we'll get them up there before the end of the day or tomorrow, let's say. And then we'll add audio and video after the fact. And there's a lot of good content there. Free and no sign-up either. TechGuyLabs.com. Now, I may have to stand corrected here. I'm not sure. Somebody that came into the chat room said, oh, you can group message Android users with an iPhone using Apple's messages. Maybe they fixed that. That would be nice. For a long time, you could not do that, and it was a severe limitation. In fact, there were videos made about being a blue bubble or a green bubble and how the green bubble folks, the Android folks, felt left out. But if they fixed that, I stand corrected. But I think that it's pretty clear that whatever is happening is in our last call, a couple of calls ago anyway, that woman has her phone set in some strange way. It's not iPhone specific. Oh, James is here. Thank you, James. He says tomorrow he's traveling. All right. 8888-ASK-LEO. So the show notes will be kept. They are being kept as we speak. Let's move on to Mike in Los Angeles, our next caller. I'm sorry, Mike, you're still on hold. It's John in Anaheim, our next caller. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Quick question. Well, hopefully it's quick. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a commercial real estate agent, and I need to take pictures of bigger buildings that I can't really get from my iPhone, so kind of aerial. And I was looking online to see what kind of drones there were. I see, like to get something decent is around $1,000 to maybe around $5,000, and I was kind of wondering your opinion on what would be the most, like, I guess, bang for my buck.
Are you going to be flying it, or are you going to hire a professional?
Probably I'll be flying it myself.
Okay. So if you hire somebody, of course, they can do it for you. You don't have to buy the drone, and they will pilot it. If you've never piloted a drone, my advice, and I wish I'd taken it, is learn to fly with a cheap drone first. Because if you do buy an expensive drone, which you probably want for the best quality photos, and you lose it, that's a real sad thing. And I've wept those tears. First drone I ever flew, this advice comes to me from my personal drone guru, who happens to be a Jesuit priest. We call him the drone father, and or the quad father. And he said, get a $49 drone on Amazon and practice with that, because you will crash it. you will have problems. They're actually harder to fly than modern drones, which have a lot of technology to keep you from crashing. So I flew that one into the sky, never saw it again. But I thought, no, that's good enough. I've learned. And I went out and bought a $500 drone from Parrot. They call it the Bebop. They said anybody could fly this. You just push button. You can't go wrong. Crashed into immediately and broke one of the wings, and now it won't fly sideways. So practice with a cheap one. And then the one everybody uses is the DJI Phantom.
Okay.
That's the best choice out there, and they make a variety of them and a variety of prices. You're not worried so much about video, I take it, just, or are you?
Not so much video, mostly just pictures.
Yeah. The Phantoms are, they've been doing this the longest time. They have really excellent capabilities. There's a variety of series, so you can buy the one that fits your needs specifically. They range anywhere from 500 to thousands.
Yeah.
And then the other company that really kind of started this whole thing is Parrot, P-A-R-R-O-T-A-R. And the Parrot AR drones were the first drones to be controlled with iPhones, first drones to kind of have self-writing mechanisms. They're very good. And they make a drone called the Bebop. That's the one I flew into a tree. That is a very nice quadcopter. I really like it. Okay. But the key for the – I'll tell you why I like – let me just make sure they're still selling the Bebop because they may have – yeah, they are. The Bebop – has a nice feature. It's got a very high-quality camera. Normally, there's two ways to take pictures with a drone. One is to have a mechanism that pan, tilts, and zooms the camera. So you get the drone in position, and then you maneuver the camera to get the shot you want. The Bebop is kind of cool. It has a fixed camera, but it's very high resolution. And what you end up doing is panning around within the field of view of the camera. The camera is very wide-angle, high resolution. And so you can get great shots without having to move the camera around. And that gives you, it makes it easier to maneuver. It lowers the price. Now, remember that if you're using this for commercial purposes, you have to register it with the Federal Aviation Administration. You have to pass a course.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why you might want to just hire somebody if you're not going to do it all the time. On the other hand, it's a really fun hobby. And you know, my friend Trey Ratcliffe, who's a drone guru as well as a high dynamic range photography guru, is a brilliant photographer. He loves the DJI, by the way. That's what he uses. He said he figured out why people like drone photography. Normally, we kind of live in flat land. We live on a 2D, two-dimensional surface that we can move around on. And we only see things from, you know, our perspective on the ground. Suddenly, when you go up with a drone, it's such a steady, beautiful view. And if you've looked at drone videos on YouTube, you know what I'm talking about. And a perspective we never get. Even in a jet plane or an airplane, you're flying much, much higher. A drone, you're just above the rooftop, sometimes even lower. And you get a unique three-dimensional perspective on the things that you see normally all the time from a bird's eye view instead of an ant's eye view. And it's true. It really is a great hobby. So you may want to buy one just because you want to play with it.
Well, I think it'll help out for work, and it just looks like a lot of fun.
Exactly. You can justify, you know, if you're only doing one or two shots, you probably should go out and hire somebody to do it. But if you also want to learn it and play with it and have it as a hobby, it's a great hobby. So there are inexpensive drones on Amazon, like in the $50 range, that you can practice with, understanding that they're not very good. They're actually harder to fly. If you feel pretty confident, go out in a field where you can't hit anything. Maybe get one of these Bebops from Parrot. They're $500, and they fly. They're pretty easy to fly. Only a lunkhead like me could really crash it.
Alrighty.
All right.
All right.
Enjoy.
Really appreciate it.
You're welcome, John. Have fun. Yeah, realtors. This has become a boon. Filmmakers too. You're starting to see a lot more aerial shots in films that you wouldn't see because it's expensive to rent a helicopter, and they're doing them with drones. Even in the new BBC series, the BBC Planet Earth, have you seen that amazing footage? And some of that footage is drone footage because they can get just unique shots of this is all the wilderness, you know, and they can go out and get amazing shots. They were shooting river dolphins. Nobody had even heard of such a thing as freshwater river dolphins, and they used a drone because it was the only way they could, you know, kind of see down into the water without scaring away the dolphins with a boat. It's pretty cool what you can do with a drone, and a great hobby. But do be aware that there are now FCC regulations. There's issues of privacy, public safety, safety for airplanes as well. There are some pretty strict rules, so you want to make sure you learn about the rules, take the tests you need to take, get the license if you're gonna play with drones. Pretty cool stuff. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. If you have some drone experience you want to share, if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk about Windows or Mac or Linux or the internet or smartphones or smartwatches, I'd love to hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Back to the phones, Patrick Rancho Cucamonga. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Leo, it's Pat.
Hey, Pat, it's Leo.
Hey, I got an irritating problem. You used to work for Apple, didn't you?
Never worked for Apple, no.
Well, you didn't? Well, you're lucky you didn't, because when you have a problem, they want you to fix it yourself, tell you what to do, you do it, and you still have the problem. Here's my problem. Last December 16th, I got the iPhone 6S, right?
Yep.
I always do the software updates when I get them. I did an iOS 10, and after that, I noticed the volume went way down. It's like it's cut in half. I tried resetting the phone, restarting it. Nothing works. Now, yesterday, I went onto my desktop, and I started looking at a chat room about the subject. You know, a lot of people out there have the same problem, and most of them say it happened right after iOS 10.
Interesting.
Now, the date of these posts I saw, Leo, were September of last year. We're going on 7-8 months. One of them said that Apple's aware of the problem, and they're working on a fix. Well, it kind of seems to me like they're dragging their feet on this. What is taking so long? Why don't they go back into the iOS 10 and find out what screwed up the volume? And get this, Leo, the new 7 Plus, okay, one of my sisters has it. Okay, she's not having the problem, but one of the bloggers said that she's having a problem with the volume, too, so it's not just the 6S. It seems to me like, I know this for a fact, too, when you do updates and upgrades, like on my desktop over the years, and I've been online like 15 years, a lot of times the update or the upgrade is no good, and it causes other problems. So, I don't know. Apple needs to get their act together with these updates.
Yeah, I'm seeing, you mentioned it, I'm looking and I'm seeing a lot of mentions of this. Of course, when you sell, 100 million phones, you're some percentage of people are going to have problems. And even if it's only 0.1%, with 100 million phones, that's 500,000 people or 100,000 people. That's enough to really get the message boards buzzing. So, I don't know how widespread this is. And all the people are saying the same thing. Contacted Apple tech support. Miserable, clueless. They said to restore the phone. So it does take Apple a while. I would say this is clearly widespread enough that there is an issue. Like, it's not chance. There's an issue. And sometimes it takes Apple a while to pinpoint the issue, come up with a fix, and push it out. But as you say, this happened with iOS 10. Apparently was happening, according to some people, in the test versions of iOS 10. They didn't fix it before the phone shipped. It's not happening to everybody. So there's a couple of possibilities. One, it's intentional. Two, no, there's a problem. I mean, in other words, they might have said, the volume's too loud in these phones. We should cut it in half. That seems unlikely. Protect their ears. Make them say, what? A lot. I don't know. More likely, there's some sort of, issue in the software. I can't imagine it's in the hardware because it worked fine until you do the update. Once you updated iOS 10, it started getting low. So as I scan through this, and I'm sure you've done this already, I don't see any fix for it. Apparently, some people are saying that there's this thing called noise cancellation. It's in the accessibilities setting, a place people don't look at too often on the iPhone because they assume, that's for people who are blind or deaf or have accessibility issues. But often the accessibility settings are really useful for everyone. So go just try this. Seem to have worked for some. Go to the accessibility settings. It's in general in settings on your iPhone. And disable phone noise cancellation. This seems like something that might have been added in iOS 10 or changed how it worked. And maybe in some cases it's making a big negative. Now, a couple of people are reporting that this worked for them. And I see somebody saying it didn't. I don't know. If there is a problem, Apple has to figure... You're right. It's been long enough. They should know. But they have to figure out what the problem is, figure out what the fix is, test the fix, make sure it works for everybody without causing more problems, and then push it out. I'm seeing posts right through April 12th on the Mac Rumors forum. That's where I'm looking. Apple support forum, similar things. This has clearly not been fixed. So all you could do is what you've done, which is call and complain. Call a national radio show and complain. I'm seeing, pages where they say, here's how you fix it. And that's that, that phone noise cancellation thing. But other than that, I don't know what else to do. If you try, maybe try a earbuds or a Bluetooth headset, see if it's bad there too. And then submit feedback. We'll put a link in the show notes to the Apple feedback form. Say, this is a bug. The problem with Apple is it's simultaneously a strength and weakness. They're the only people who make iPhones. They're the only people who make Macs. They're the only people who make iPads. When you buy Windows or you buy Android, there are many manufacturers you can choose from. And when one manufacturer doesn't do a good job, there's somewhere else to go. That's not the case with the iPhone. You can only get it from Apple. And it's Apple's way or the highway. And if Apple decides that, just turn it up, live with it or whatever, there's no recourse. I guess you could sue them. But because there's no competition for Apple, there's no other company, you just got to, wait until they fix it and hope that they do and keep being a squeaky wheel for sure. Hey, let's say hello to my good friend and personal chat room physician, Dr. Mom on the line. Hi, Dr. Mom.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm not smelling the tar on the roof like you are.
Oh, man. They decided to put to tar the roof on the building. And, of course, they're not going to do it during the work day, right? They're only going to do it on the weekends when no one's here, except I'm in here. Okay, sorry.
Well, that's what Febreze is for.
That's what a gas mask is for.
Isn't just about.
Dr. Mom, you're a physician. Isn't that toxic, the smell from tar? Is that toxic?
Yeah, it's petroleum byproduct.
Yeah, I don't want to breathe that.
They shouldn't be doing it while people are in the building, but
No, they have to do it during only on the weekends when no one's here.
They also tar the streets and people are around.
I know.
It's kind of a limit to.
Hey, I feel for the person who has to do it. That's one of the worst jobs out there.
Yep.
Working with tar.
No, there are worse things you can work with than tar.
Okay, I don't want to know.
No, you don't.
I do not want to know. What can I do for you, Lil?
Okay, I made a huge mistake. I'm an editor on a peer-reviewed scientific journal. And while we were having an editorial meeting, I said, we need to get social media, we need to get some people seeing this, more interaction stuff. And then I went out of the room to get a cup of coffee.
Uh-oh.
And of course, what happened.
I don't know. They started a Facebook page? I don't know what.
Well, I'm in charge of it now.
Oh, congratulations.
I already set up the Twitter site. Unfortunately, the journal's name is JPen.
Oh,
and I couldn't get that because that's a porn site.
Hey, what you're learning is something that many of us have known for years. Everything is a porn site. All the good names are taken. Hang on, Dr. Mom. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, and I'll help you with that. And also, I want to know how you like your new phone. I hear you got one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You got the Pixel XL, right?
Yeah, I can't believe it came in 72 hours.
See, mine just got shipped, too. I was going to send you a note saying, even though they say it won't come till May or whatever, they have them.
Yeah. All I can say is thank goodness, because my Note 4 was just overheating so badly.
Yeah.
It was rebooting three, four times a day. I did everything. I took all the installed software on it. I did a factory reset. It's got to have been a hardware problem.
So how long have you had the Pixel?
Since yesterday. I spent about 8 hours yesterday.
Yeah, messing with it. Yep.
Well, it's pretty easy to transfer things, but then I had to put in a different program to transfer over the SMS logs and the call logs.
Right.
By the program that was going to do that and just moved it over.
Good. I think you're going to love it. I think you're going to love it.
Yeah. And then I used Nova Launcher, so I had, once all the apps were reinstalled, I just took the file.
Isn't that great?
The backup.
Yep. That's
great. And then, boom, I'm in business.
I back up my launcher settings to Google Drive, so because I set up so many different Android phones. It really simplifies things.
Exactly. And I just had to run over to the AT&T store today because the Note 4 wasn't a nano SIM. It was a micro SIM.
Right. That's how old it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Walk in there. They said, oh, that's great. We wish we had it to sell because everybody's coming in asking for it. Popped it in. And people who say they can't get visual voicemail on it, they're wrong. AT&T puts out a standalone app.
Good.
A visual voicemail.
I think you're going to love it. Now, the camera is 10 times better than the Note 4. I don't know if you've played with it yet, but
I've taken some pictures.
It's considered the best camera out there right now. Beats every other camera, including the new Galaxy S8.
Well, I mean, I just love it. It's great. I love the fact that it's the first pure Google phone I've ever had. I've always had a carrier phone.
You'll never go back. You'll never go back.
I, with great glee, dumped all the AT&T junk off it.
I know.
Junk off it.
Well, the next thing you could do is maybe get a Fi SIM. Before you travel, get a Fi SIM. Because Google Fi is great for traveling. Much better than Verizon.
Well, I'm an AT&T. Same thing.
Oh, you're AT&T. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I've got Google Voice on this, too, because this way I have two phone numbers on the one call.
I use
Google Voice
for
work. Patients call me on that, and I use the regular line for my friends and stuff. It's perfect.
Yep. Dr. Mom's on the line, and she got saddled with the responsibility of doing a social media presence for her medical journal. What does JPER stand for?
JPEN is the Journal of Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition.
Well, of course it is.
Right. It's basically a hard science journal. We talk about, you know, new technologies, one of the big technologies coming out right now. I don't know if you've heard about something called the microbiome, which is the realization that the normal gut flora, normal gut bacteria, is good for you. And a lot of the stuff we're doing, the processed foods and things we're eating, are messing with it.
Yes. Well, I think we're learning more and more about that kilogram mass in our tummies. It actually determines some of our personality and certainly our health.
Oh, yeah. But what happened was I'm on the editorial board, and we really had no social presence anywhere, even to let people who were subscribing to stuff know the journal's coming out, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I said, well, why don't we have a Twitter page for announcements, a Facebook page? Then I went out of the room to get a cup of coffee.
Now it's your job, Lil. So really, the whole key on a social media presence, you're absolutely right. I don't care what you're doing. A social media presence is always a value. But the whole key is it needs to be staffed. It's like saying, well, let's start a blog, and if nobody's going to put posts up there, well, it doesn't really matter, does it?
I think I'm the entire staff, at least for now. I already
congratulations. Does JPEN have a website?
It's part of, the overall organization is called ASPEN, the American Society for Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition. And if you Google JPEN and then space ASPEN, it'll take you right to it.
So you have a page within the ASPEN pages.
I have a page. I grabbed JPEN Web on Twitter because JPEN was already taken by somebody else.
Okay.
And Aspen's Twitter presence is Aspen Web.
Name isn't that important because, as you know, you have an at handle on Twitter, but then you can give it a longer name, which you probably should do, that is more communicative, and that can be anything you want.
Well, I did. Since everybody, including the National Institute of Health, has called the journal JPEN, that's the name on Twitter.
Okay.
I just couldn't get the handle.
Yeah.
But what I was calling to ask about, we do a podcast with every journal release. The editor-in-chief will discuss with the author of the lead article. And they're not getting into the really technical details, but why is this important for the clinician? What is relevant to current practice?
So that's the other important thing, is to understand what's your social media strategy aimed at? Who's it aimed at? What's it for? Who do you want to reach? And so you know who you want to reach, and it's physicians in this field, right?
Right. The thing is that I finally hauled this away from our old publisher who had our podcast mixed with three other journals. I said, no, I want my own.
Good for you.
But I'd like to get us on things like TuneIn and such, because I talked, if I said use Dogcatcher, you know, use Downcast.
Yeah, it has to be as easy as possible, doesn't it? And exactly. I bet you, so you know your audience, you know what they use. They're, everybody listens to podcasts on their phones these days. It's rare that they listen in any other way. And most of them will use, as you say, that app they already have. If most people are listening to TuneIn or iHeartRadio or right. Stitcher or Slacker. Ideally, and certainly this is what we do, and Lil knows this, but I'll tell everybody else, I have a pretty brisk podcast business on the side. What we do is we try to be everywhere your audience might be. Now, we're more general interest than JPEN would be, but nevertheless, you want to be wherever your audience is. So it's ease of access is everything. So TuneIn is a great idea.
What I need to do is know how to do it. I check what they say. I need a splash page. I need description. I need the feeds and stuff.
Right.
But I need some hints. What's the kind of thing to tell TuneIn? Why should they list it? Yeah.
I don't know. You think I know?
You got yours listed.
I had somebody doing it for me.
Okay.
I would guess that it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle because it's such a narrow specialty. And they are going to want to have podcasts that are going to get the largest possible audience, right?
Right.
So being in a podcast directory is important, but I'm not sure. It may be an uphill battle to get on TuneIn. What you're going to want to tell them is something that's going to serve them, which is why lots of people are going to listen to this.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I want to do is I want to start building up a directory of the podcast as kind of an online medical education.
Most people, I'll be honest, most people are going to find your podcast probably number one through the webpage. That's why I asked you. So you got to make sure the podcast is featured prominently on the webpage with instructions for how to listen, preferably a link, right? And you can make a link that will allow them to subscribe in the podcatcher, on their phone. You can make that possible. Or you can say, and I would do this, we will send you a link to your phone. Give us your phone number. And then
right now we don't have that because I'm still pulling this out of our old publisher.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
But
these are the kinds of things that would help. You can't count on people to think about how docs are going to discover you. Most of your audience will be subscribers to the journal, yes?
I would think so, but what I'd like to do also is if I can catch in some of the news services, media service, because every time I hear them discussing and they go to doctor, I'm not mentioning his name.
Yeah, but you're not going to.
So.
Podcast is going to help you with that because it takes too much time for a journalist to listen to a podcast.
Right.
Though you do that with press releases, you do that with the web page, you do that with Twitter and Facebook. But the podcast is a different beast. It's really for somebody who's going to spend time listening to it and no journalist who's trying to get background information. You know, I'll tell you when they will listen to it. If they're an audio or television, they'll listen or watch to see if the doctor you're proposing has on-air skills, you know, is presentable.
Right.
Right? But that's after they've already decided to cover it and they're looking for somebody to talk about it.
What I'm trying to do is just get the overall is, hey, we're the guys who got the information about this, not Dr. So-and-so.
Right, right. Establish your credentials, yes. But that's what people – look, that's what it's all about, right? It's always
exactly.
about that. It's what social media is always about, is to convince people that you're the authority, to convince people that you're somebody worth paying attention to for whatever reason, because you're interesting, you're smart, you're funny. That's what it's all about. And, I wouldn't even eschew Facebook. I think Facebook could be value. Having a Facebook page nowadays is probably as important as having a web page. So I would look at Facebook. You're already doing Twitter. That's great. You hope that docs and journalists who cover this area will add you to their feed. That's the fastest and easiest way to say, hey, we've got a press release or we've got an expert or we want to talk about this or here's a story you ought to be covering. That's going to be in your Twitter feed. All journalists use that. That's a really big resource for journalists. I'm not sure, what the advice would be with TuneIn except to try, and get it on everybody's, get on Stitcher, get on iTunes. Of course, you've already done that work, right, to get on iTunes.
Right. We're on it, but we're in that combined mashup, and I'm working now to get it separated out.
Yeah.
But I need to get our own RSS.
Can you create your own feed? Okay, yeah, that'd be the first thing to create your own feed so that you own it. I think you know what to do. You've been You've been around the block a few times. I think you have some pretty good ideas about technology. I bet you could get this. They picked the right person, Lil, I'm sorry to say.
I guess that's what you get for going out of the room for a cup of coffee.
Congratulations. You own it.
Exactly.
Somebody's saying an RSS feed. I don't know about that. I guess that's still valuable. Certainly for a podcast, it is. But even for your journal, maybe. I think the right thing to do is you've already done it. And I would also consider Facebook as in addition to Twitter.
I'm trying to get that. I just have to get the higher up permission
right.
to set up.
Oh, of course you do. I know. So you like your new pic? Dr. Mom replaced her worn out Note 4 with a Pixel XL. She was able to get it pretty quickly from Google. You like it?
So far, it's been absolutely great. I mean, it's the usual setup. Easy transfer didn't transfer everything. It didn't transfer.
No, new phone, it's always a little bit of a pain, but I think you'll like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So nice to hear from you every once in a while. In a medium other than text.
And me yelling at you to go eat something.
Oh, I take it with a grain of salt. Oh. Literally. I put salt in my bone broth. Our show today brought to you by a really great resource. I want everybody to know about Capterra. I told them you should really get on the Tech Guy show. Because I get these calls all the time. You know, I'm working, you know, my company, my boss said, all right, we need to find the best medical practice software, and it's your job. Or we need an accounting system, and it's your job. Or we need to know what the best, office solution, and it's your job. If you're looking for software for your business, what do you do when you get that assignment? You Google it? Is that really working for you? Now you got to go to a lot of different pages, look a lot. You don't know what the features are. You can't compare. Capterra is the solution. This is a completely free-to-use directory of software solutions, 400 categories from app development, business continuity, content marketing. Actually, I should have told Dr. Mom about this. This would be perfect for her. File sharing, human resources, web analytics. 30,000 software solutions. They're all there with verified user reviews, so you could trust the reviews. Really, that's a big part of it, these verified user reviews. But you also have checkboxes. So if you're looking at medical practice, you could say, do I have to take multiple doctors? Yes or no? There's checkboxes. It takes insurance, helps with insurance. And you just check the features you want. You can either take a look at 4 or 5 packages and compare them side by side to see what they do. It's great. Small businesses use this. Large businesses use this. Capterra is the best way to find the right software solution. So if you've been going to Google and Googling it, that is the most inefficient way. Find your software solution at capterra.com/twit. Capterra.com/twit. Website building, customer service, project management, anything you might use in business. There's a program for that. There's usually many programs for that. Here's how you find out which one is right for you. And this is absolutely free. There's no obligation. You don't need to register. It just you go there and you use it. And I just want everybody to know about it. Do what you do better. And let Capterra help you find the software you need to do it. Join the millions who use Capterra every month to find software solutions for their businesses. It's Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twit, and start your free software. Just use it. Just try it. Give it a shot. Start your free software search today. But if you do me a favor, go through our special URL. That way they know you heard it on the show. Capterra.com/twit. Capterra.com/twit. They're really great. Nice people with a service that really is a boon. It'll also probably save me some calls because people often call and say, all right, you're the tech guy. What's the best business software for banks? And I don't know. You look at Capterra. Capterra.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Mike in Granada Hills, California. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you. I just started to do online banking, and I use Google Chrome.
Yep.
And I clear browsing every time I, you know, I use it. But I'm told that Google still has all of my account numbers, and I wonder if there's any way to delete them, or should I use a safer server?
You're just fine. Google does not have your account numbers. that's not saved at Google. You're fine. Are you saving your passwords in the browser? Is that what you're doing?
No, I don't save anything.
Okay. The only way Google would have access to anything is if you decided to, and it's not a risky thing, but I don't recommend it, save the passwords in the browser. You know how browsers will say, hey, I see you just created a password for a new site. You want me to save that for you? Say no. Turn that feature off, only because it'll save it in the browser, and then in order for Google to get access to it, you'd have to synchronize it to say, I want to synchronize my bookmarks. And at that point, it would be stored on Google's servers, not that they would necessarily do anything with it, but that would be the one way that they would get access to it. You don't even have to clear out your browser each time. Internet banking is safe. Google is not trying to get your bank account numbers, believe me. That's the kind of thing a crook does, a criminal does. They are not a criminal enterprise. So I do banking. I've done banking since the very earliest days of online banking. With Bank of America, so far back that it was a black screen with white text, all uppercase, 40 characters a line. It was really primitive, but I wanted to do this really badly. And of course, now it's a lot more modern, and by the way, a lot more secure. The real thing I would suggest is make sure your bank is paying attention to security. That's more important. For instance, when you log in, do you have it set up to do a second factor of authentication for the bank to send you a text message or some other verification?
No, I don't.
Turn that on.
Okay.
That's more important. And every bank should offer that. If they don't, then you really have to question their commitment to security. I'm sure they do. All the big national banks do. Turn on second factor authentication. It'll be in the security area. That way, even if somebody did get your password, they would then have to have your cell phone or be able to get this information somehow. And that's why it's called a second factor of authentication. And that makes it really robust. Hackers hate two-factor authentication.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Turn that on wherever you can. Uh-huh. It's a little, there's a trade-off. There's a balance between security and convenience. Security is fundamentally inconvenient. Mm-hmm. But it's worth a little bit extra inconvenience to significantly improve your security, and that's one of the things. Since you're doing all those other things, that's one more thing I would do.
I agree. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And have no fear. It is. It's very safe. I do all my financial transactions on my computer. I feel Chrome is a very good choice. Google is not a criminal enterprise. It is not trying to gather your passwords, believe me. I think there'd be quite a hue and cry if Google started breaking into bank accounts. I don't think they need to be honest with you. Not the business they're in. And they don't store them. I have to say, there's, to my knowledge, never been a breach of Google. There are very few financial institutions that haven't been breached. So that's really where you want to focus your security on the financial institution. Make sure they're doing everything they can to protect your account. Even better in many cases, if your bank has an app to do a bank app on the phone, they will also offer multiple factor authentication in most cases. Turn that on if you can do it. This is one area where security really is important. Mike in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike. Hello, Mike. Come to the phone, my Beamish boy. Hello, Mike.
I'm here.
Yes, sir.
I'm here. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. You've been hitting all of my questions today. It's been an amazing show.
Good.
Messaging apps, Pixel versus the Galaxy.
Oh, I love the Pixel. I have the Galaxy S8, and I really wanted to love that, but I have to say there's nothing like pure Android. Pixel is, even though it's not as pretty, is the workhorse. It's the phone. So what's your next question?
So the next question, I've got an old MacBook Pro 17-inch that I cannot wait to get rid of. I've got to upgrade this thing because it's been a dismal machine for its whole life. I've honestly never had a worse laptop.
Wow. Tell me what you hate about it.
Uh, It is. It's always run slow. It's always kind of been clunky.
Yeah, it's pretty ancient now. And that big screen, yeah, man, that thing is a clunker. Yeah.
Well, the big, yeah, but it's great to have that real estate. I'm a writer and a researcher, and I work in Photoshop, and I do all sorts of things. So I've got multiple documents and multiple things open all the time that I'm putting together, and to have that much real estate that I can, take with me is a great thing. But anyway, this has got to go because it's loud, it's slow, it crashes, and it just doesn't work. So there's obviously the new MacBook Pro. Which is an option. I hate the USB-C, that everything's got to go into that.
Anything you get, though, will be much faster, better, much quieter, much less hot.
Yeah.
All of the above.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
But then the Surface Book.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I have. It's more like a laptop, but it has a detachable screen. I tell you, one big difference, I mean, besides Windows and Mac, and to be honest, mm-hmm. Windows 10 isn't, it's pretty, I mean, you're not going to have any trouble moving back and forth. The biggest difference is it's a touch screen and it has a pen.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you would use that. Apple has said, we're not going to ever do a touch screen. We've got iOS for that. I love it. I love the Surface Studio. I love the Surface Book. I think touch is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why Apple...
I've played around with it in the store, and just what you're able to do on the demo.
It's awesome.
You can't go very far.
So if you think you could live with Windows 10, I think a Surface Book is a very good choice.
Okay.
Now, you told Heather you want, silence was important.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to the next thing, because I need a tablet or a tablet-type device that I can take into a sound booth, right, to record.
Oh.
Can't have a fan on it because the microphone will obviously pick up the fan and any other mechanical noise.
That's so, another issue, because everything has a fan.
Even the tablet portion of the Surface Book?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, because the GPU is in the base and the extra battery is in the base. Yeah, I think it probably still has a fan, but you're right, it won't be very loud. I've never heard the fan on the Surface Book. That's an interesting point. Yeah, if you'd be content with the tablet... Hang on just a sec. I have to take a break, but I'll talk to you off the air because news is coming up and we don't want to stop for that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More in a minute. So there are PCs with no fan, but generally they are... slower because modern processors are hot. I don't hear any fan coming out of the Surface Book, but even if they're that's an interesting question. I hadn't really paid attention to that. Bringing like a MacBook, like their little thin MacBook,
mm-hmm.
I think that might be a fanless design. But it's going to be a much lower power, but still be better than your 17. But
part of the issue is I really do want a good workhorse machine, right?
Yeah. See, those are more likely to be noisy. Now I have to say, with solid state drives, I mean, it's gotten a lot better than it used to.
Right.
Nothing will be as loud as that 17 was.
No. I mean, the fan on that thing. I honestly probably had 5 Windows laptops, and then all of a sudden, I did a project on a little Mac, mini Mac, and it was great. That thing, I mean, and it was an old machine, and it just cranked through everything I needed. And I thought, wow, I need a new laptop. I'm going to go with a MacBook Pro. And from day one, that thing was just a beast, and it's only gotten worse. And I don't know why I've kept it this long, but. I don't mind getting a laptop and a tablet, so that I can have my workhorse, because I needed a laptop for the recording aspect of things anyway.
And what are you doing? What are you doing in there with the laptop in the studio? Are you,
audio books, voiceover,
but what are you, so you're reading off the screen?
Yeah. So it's just reading the script off the tablet.
Yeah, generally any of these will get really loud if you're playing a video game. But if you've just got a text screen on there, and you're scrolling through it slowly, I don't think it's going to go loud at all.
Okay.
I can't. I mean, I'm listening right now to this Surface Book. It's running the chat room and a browser. I can't hear a bloody thing. I think it's silent. I don't think the fan is on. And if it is, it's very, very quiet. Let me detach it. Yeah, it's. I don't hear anything.
So you love the Surface Book pretty well then, huh?
Yeah, this is the Surface Book.
Dell XPS, what do you think of that?
So if it comes down to laptops, the Dell XPS is fantastic. You know what else it just came out and is really good is the 2017 Lenovo X1 Carbon. That's super thin and light, 2.5 pounds. Probably not going to have terrible fan sound, I would guess.
They have a 15-inch version.
No, it's a 14. Although you should look at the 14s. I don't think they're too bad.
Okay.
So XPS, Lenovo ThinkPad Carbon, certainly the Surface. Either Pro or the Surface Book, excellent choices. Let's see what else. Acer, HP too makes some very good ones that are not terribly expensive. So as soon as I said Acer,
any of those versus the MacBook Pro.
I don't like the new MacBook Pros an awful heck of a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That Touch Bar I think is less than useless. It gets in the way.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed. I ended up trading mine in for the Touch Bar List version, which I actually is very much like any old MacBook. It's pretty nice. The 13. I had the 15 with a Touch Bar. It's nice. You'd like the 15. It's the fastest. If you don't want to do that Type C stuff though, man, there's like the Lenovo X1 has Type C, two Type C's, but it also has USB, you know, Type A USBs. You're not giving up your traditional dongles.
Yeah, I walked into the Apple Store a couple of weeks ago and started looking in the low model, you know, the one without the Touch Bar. It's got the USB and it's got a card reader and it's got everything. And I thought, oh my gosh, Apple finally got some sense back. And then I started looking and said, okay, well, this is their, you know,
it's the old one.
It's going to be way faster than I've got, but
it's the old one.
You can't get the bigger processor.
No, the new one's all Type C. It's got two Type C.
Yeah.
So that's an old one. That's a 2016, a 2015 model. So if you want USB, go get the X1, ThinkPad X1 Carbon. Very nice. Let me see.
And the Dell, I cannot understand why they put the camera right there on top.
Because there's no bezel. Keyboard. They had to. There's nowhere to put it. There's no frame.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of that.
It's the most insane. Well, it's a beauty, but it's insane.
Well, it's shooting right up your nose. If you use that all the time, that's a deal breaker. If you use I like the XPS a lot, and I never do Skype on it, so it's not a deal breaker for me, but you're right. I mean, but that was the trade-off for having a bezel-less screen.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. So, but I would say HP Spectre, very good. Believe it or not, HP was junk for years, but they've actually kind of come around. I don't know who makes a 15. There may be a 15 in Lenovo. I would look around. That's boy, everybody's loving that laptop.
The Lenovo X1 Carbon.
X1 Carbon. Yeah. Yep.
I'll look into that. If it's the Surface Book where I can take that tablet off, I'll learn to live with the smaller screen.
Yeah. Uncle Bic is saying that you can change to passive cooling in both the Dell and the ThinkPad. That in the BIOS settings, you can go and say, I want no fan, please. And given what you're doing, I can't imagine you get any fan noise if you're just looking at text.
Sure. All right.
Okay.
Cool.
Enjoy your new laptop. You're going to spend some money.
Any great tablet? Yeah, any great tablets out there that you love?
No. Really, no. In fact, I don't really like the idea of detaching a tablet. I do like some of the two-in-ones. And Asus, the Lenovo Yoga is very good. The Asus has a two-in-one. Those are regular laptops, but the screen goes all the way around to turn into a tablet.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Those are kind of nice.
Yeah.
I've never detached a screen on my Surface Book. Never.
Yeah.
And it caught, and it took them about 8 months to figure out how to make that work. They were doing firmware updates for 8 months before it really worked right.
Wow. All right. Well, I got a few options to look at and crazy decision to make, I guess.
Yeah.
And Pixel all the way over Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No brainer.
Good to know.
All right. Cool. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, man. Great show. Appreciate
it. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, hey. How are you today, Leo Laporte, the tech guy? It's time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. Time for me to help you spend money, save money, throw away money, whatever. 88, I like doing all of that. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Let's talk high tech. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Let's go to Venice Beach. And Gina, hi Gina.
Hi Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
You live in one of the most beautiful areas. I love Venice.
Oh, I do too. But the Venice that I mostly love is going away.
It's changed, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. There's just a lot of, you know, Snapchat is here and Google is here and all.
That's right. There are a bunch of tech companies there. They all want to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're losing our diversity and our uniqueness.
That's a shame. Yeah.
I know. But, Leo, I am calling because my iPhone 6 will not connect to the internet. I have a Wi-Fi connection. I've turned Wi-Fi on and off. I've turned my phone on and off. I've gone so far as to reset my phone, which incidentally, for some reason, it doesn't want to reset. And I tried to push the home button and the other button.
Yeah, the hard reset. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, does it not get on Wi-Fi anywhere you go? If you go to a coffee shop, same problem?
I'm offhand, I wouldn't know, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't because it does not.
So that's the first thing I'd want to make sure is it's not something just localized. If it, you know, okay. You can't get on anybody's Wi-Fi, then clearly there's something wrong with the phone as opposed to maybe something with their Wi-Fi settings.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Try that. If it doesn't, you go down to your coffee shop and it doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, it's possible that there's something in the settings that is keeping it from working. But it may also be that you know, it's completely possible to have a hardware problem and your Wi-Fi, that's a radio. And if that radio fails, you won't get Wi-Fi anymore. Everything else will work, but you just won't get Wi-Fi. Or if the antenna gets knocked loose. And the only people who can look at that and fix it really are Apple.
Are the big guys.
But you can go, you know, there's an Apple store, I think, fairly nearby. You can go there, and they're very nice. Even if you didn't buy it there, that's their product. And so you could say, first thing I do is say, hey, I'm not getting Wi-Fi. In fact, that's a good place to test the Wi-Fi. They have free Wi-Fi in Apple stores. And say, I'm not getting Wi-Fi. And then we'll immediately know what settings to take a look at, make sure that it's all set.
But I do connect to Wi-Fi.
You do.
I do connect.
You just don't get any data.
If I go to Google for a search, nothing.
Just a blank screen, or does it say
No, it just says no internet access at this time.
Well, see, that's why I want you to go somewhere else and try it, because it may be, so you're connecting to your Wi-Fi router. That's good,
yes.
But it may be that you're not getting you're not getting data from your Wi-Fi router, and that's exactly the message you'd get. So that's why it would be the first thing you'd want to try is see if that happens anywhere else.
Okay, so exclusively to this, because I do have an iPad, and it connects fine.
Okay, so your Wi-Fi is working.
Yes.
Okay. I still would try it just to see if it can't work at other Wi-Fis. Then it's probably just the let's see. You're getting connected, so you're seeing the bars, you're seeing the access point. It's connecting to it. It's saying connected, and it's got. This is a little more techy, but you can go in there and see if it got an address assigned, for instance.
No, I don't think I'm that. I don't think it's that quite that much because I go to the Wi-Fi in the settings, and I'll close it and open it, and then I'll open it again, and then it'll look for Wi-Fi, and it'll find mine, and I put in the username and password, and it doesn't tell me it didn't connect.
Do you have to do the username and password each time?
Not the username. I'm sorry. I have to do the password.
Each time you have to do the password?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that on your iPad, do you?
I don't believe so.
No. You know, normally, if you enter the password once, it remembers it.
Okay.
So it does sound like there's something wrong with the Wi-Fi on that phone.
Okay.
But again, I would try it somewhere else to make sure. You know, it's possible, for instance, for a router to reject a device and say, nope, you can't get on here. There's all sorts of things. Does somebody else manage your Wi-Fi, or do you manage it?
We manage it.
Okay.
So here's a quick question. I just recently changed my iMac to cable modem so I could get more MBSP and MBPS. I'm not sure if it was right after that, but shortly after that, I started having this problem. Could that be an issue?
Well, it may be. I need to understand quite what you did. So you were, before you had the cable modem, you were getting internet from where?
Our modem, but it was Wi-Fi. We have Wi-Fi.
I see. So you put your Mac on hardwired. You connected it via a wire to the cable modem.
Correct.
Okay. Do you have multiple Ethernet ports on that cable modem or just one?
Yes, multiple.
We have multiple.
I hear your husband in the background.
Yes.
Okay, that means it's a router. And the point of that is, unless you have a router, your cable modem will only serve one computer at a time. But if you have a router, that's what a router does. It shares the Internet connectivity to multiple devices. And obviously that's working because your iPad continues to work while your iMac is connected, right?
Yeah.
And your husband hasn't turned on any filtering or security features in the cable modem or the wireless router to block anything.
No, all we did was plug the cable in.
Okay.
What about the 100 increase 100?
Yeah, and then just so we could increase the megabits.
Yeah, you get more speed when you're hardwired than when you're on wireless.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That usually isn't a problem. The problem is I'm not there. I can't see how the phone's configured, how the router's configured. So I can only give you kind of a general prescription. Step one would be to try that phone on somebody else's Wi-Fi and see if you can get online. And if it works there, then we have to go back and look at your router settings and look at your phone settings and see what's going on. There's something else. But if it doesn't work somewhere else, and it's my suspicion that that's what's going to happen. It's easy that, you know, your phone gets thrown around a little bit. It could be that the little wire leading to the antenna fell off. It could be that chip stopped working. These things happen. And the only way to really find that out is to take it to the Apple store and say, hey, this isn't getting Wi-Fi anymore. What's the story?
Okay.
And they can either figure it out, and make a change, or they'll say, yeah, you're right, it's broken.
Okay.
but I think really they're the ones to do that. So first try, just go to the nearest open Wi-Fi access spot and see if you can surf and you can get online. Okay?
Right.
Your phone's not in airplane mode or anything like that, right? The Wi-Fi.
No, No. I've talked to all my
friends. No, I could tell that. I just want to make sure. Yeah, give it a try somewhere else just to see.
Will do.
And all right.
Thank you, Leo, so much for your time.
Enjoy a beautiful day in Venice Beach.
We so appreciate you being there.
My pleasure. I'm glad to help.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. I'm jealous. I'm going to come down and stay with you. You know, that's what I should do. I should just come down and help him. You got a guest room? I could just come down. No, all right. That's probably a violation of FCC rules in 15 different sections, right? Hosts may not ask to come over and stay with listeners. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Let's go to Burbank. Walter is on the line. Hello, Walter.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I promise I wouldn't have said that, and I said it anyway.
No, it's, you know what? It's automatic. It's fine. I don't mind.
Yeah. Hey, so I've been wanting to call you for a while about cordless phones. Yasmina said old-fashioned, and I felt really old when she said that. But
cordless phones.
Cordless home phones.
Wow. Well, there's only one thing I really know to say, okay? It's called DECT. Yeah. DECT stands for Digital Enhanced Cordless Telecommunications.
Okay.
And it's a much improved technology for cordless phones. I think the latest version is 6, DECT, DECT 6. And it makes a very big difference in the cordless phones. So it helps you with interference. There's less interference on the cordless phones than there used to be. But it helps you with interference. It gets, I think, a much more solid, much higher quality of sound. And I think that that's really all you need to know. There are a lot of different companies that make DECT-compatible phones. When you go to the, you know, Office Depot or Staples or Best Buy and to look for the phone, you'll just see it on the box, DECT. I'm a fan of the Panasonics. That's what I've used for years. And they make DECT, but so do VTEC, and VTECs are a little bit less expensive. Do you want to use this with your computer or with Bluetooth? Is there any technology side to this?
My question was really based on privacy. Like many years ago, I bought a Panasonic that used Sprint Spectrum.
Right.
I was hoping that would protect me against people with their scanner. I had a friend who had a scanner.
No, they figured out how to get around that. Yeah, pretty quick.
So I've gotten, in the past, I used to like make sure I was on a wired phone when I was talking to the bank or the credit card company, but I've kind of forgotten about doing those things, and lately I've been thinking about it. I'm a fan of your Security Now show, so I listen.
I'm going to have to ask Steve Gibson what he thinks.
I sent him a note, but he never responds to me, so I thought he might know.
Yeah, he doesn't do direct response, and we've never talked about that. I'll have to ask him. It uses something called FDMA, which is, you know, you've heard of CDMA, which is what Verizon and Sprint used to use. Phone systems used to use TDMA. DECT uses both FDMA and TDMA, which is frequency division multiple access and time division multiple access. So it is, in effect, spread spectrum. Uses 10 different channels. But I don't think there's encryption, which is, you know, the only thing that would, you know, guarantee that you'd have some privacy. Let me look, and I'm looking at the spec right now. You know, by using FDMA, they're frequency hopping, just like spread spectrum did. So it jumps around in the frequencies, which makes it a little bit hard. I mean, that provides a somewhat of a barrier to somebody getting into your stuff here. Let me see what it's using for security. I don't see encryption. That's what you kind of like, is encrypted to the base.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, once you're on the base, now you're on wired.
Yeah, kind of. I actually use,
a VoIP.
Yeah.
Those are pretty secure.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. I'm looking at the Wikipedia article for DECT, and I point you to that. There is a section called security. And, it does look like it, in fact, uses a form of encryption. So Wikipedia says the encryption is fairly weak. However, fairly weak is better than none.
Yeah.
It looks like they've paid some attention anyway. Certainly this would be better than any other solution. It runs at 1.9 gigahertz, which is a good band. It's not interfered with by your Wi-Fi or anything, you know, that you might have in it. But it's a high enough frequency that it's probably not going to transmit down the block, which is another way of kind of protecting you. Somebody would have to be sitting on your curb to pick up your things. That's a great question. I'll ask Steve next time I see him if he has any information on this. But, they do use encryption, but it's according to Wikipedia, not the strongest in the world. The encryption uses a 35-bit initialization vector, and the voice stream is 64-bit. That's pretty good. Admittedly, it's not as strong as, you know, PGP or something. But for a streaming system, I think 64-bit is pretty good. Hey, it's better than nothing.
Right.
And it's still using spread spectrum, so I think you got. I think you have a pretty good choice there.
All right, thank you. You know, do you know the Maker Faire?
I'm very well aware of it. We've covered Maker Faires. I know the guys who started Make Magazine, a big fan of everything that Make has done. Yeah. Are you a maker?
I work in prop special effects.
Oh, neat. So you're a maker by trade.
Yeah, I'm going to go there this year. I have a ticket for one day. I hope that's enough, long enough time.
Oh, it will be, yeah. Maker Faires are fantastic. You're going to go to the L.A. Maker Faire?
No, up north.
Oh, our Maker Faire up here in San Mateo. Well, that's the big one. That's where it all started, although there are literally hundreds of Maker Faires worldwide now. Makers, the whole idea is, just as there are software and hardware hackers, there are people who make things. It's kind of bringing us back to the days when we actually, you know, made things. Although in many cases, the things at Maker Faire are kind of a mix between your props and the kinds of things hackers might make. Digital technologies, kind of fun stuff. They have a lot of really cool demos. They also have places where kids can learn to solder. It's really, part of it is about getting kids back using their hands and get back in touch with the idea that they control technology. It's not just something they passively consume. I'm a big fan. If you go to Maker Faire with an E at the end, .com, you can learn all about Maker Faire. Find one near you. And yeah, May 19th is the Bay Area Maker Faire. Good. Come up. Enjoy it. You're going to have a great time.
Well,
it's kind of like an old-fashioned kind of medieval market mixed with circus, mixed with performance art. It is a blast. We were out in Detroit. Actually, it was Dearborn, Michigan, near Detroit, for the Maker Faire. Ford had helped sponsor it with the Make Magazine a couple of years ago, and had a blast out there. It is a lot of fun. I don't know if they'll have it at the Maker Faire in May, but there's a guy who goes to every Maker Faire. You ever play the game Mousetrap? It's a fun game. You know, it comes with all these parts, and you play the game. You assemble the parts. You're making a giant Rube Goldberg contraption at the end. It'll catch the mouse at the very end, right? All these plastic parts. Well, there's a guy who's got a life-size mouse trap involving, you know, old cars and chains and motors and flames. And it's the most amazing thing. He sets it all up, has a kid come up and flip the switch, and you just watch this contraption take, you know, 10 minutes to finally, at the end, catch the mouse, which usually I think is a guy in a mouse costume. I think so. Anyway, look for that. That's a lot of fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, MakerFaire.com. I'm glad to give them a plug. They're coming up in May. If you have any expertise with cordless phones, it's not something we normally talk about, but nowadays it's pretty digital, isn't it? Give me a ring, 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here comes John, my cordless phone expert.
The end of the mousetrap thing is a safe dropping on a car.
Oh!
Right? It's got a safe way up on a crane.
I forgot, yeah. But there is a guy dressed up as a mouse, isn't there?
Well, yeah, but he's not
who's getting caught. No. At the end, it's a safe dropping on a car. I remember now.
Yeah.
It squishes the car. That is awesome. It's unbelievable. I got it all wrong. I thought that at the end of the mouse trap, they would catch a mouse. But now, reviewing a video on YouTube of the life-sized mouse trap. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. In fact, at the end of the giant Rube Goldberg machine, they drop a 5-ton bank safe onto a car, and it squishes it. It's very satisfying. And somebody's saying, the mouse is in the car. Okay, good enough. Very, very satisfying. Yeah, if you get a chance to go to a Maker Faire, and there are all over the place, it's so much fun. And bring the kids. Absolutely bring the kids, because it's an education for them. It's really all about them. It's about getting parents and kids together, building things, making things, so they understand technology, and they have an affinity for it and a comfort with it that you can only get by getting hands-on, right? Let's go back to the phones. Dan in San Clemente is next. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, wonderful pleasure and privilege to talk to you. Longtime listener. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Hello.
Hello. You don't hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I don't.
You
now
don't?
Do. Now,
now
I do.
You do. Oh, magic. What can I do for you?
All right. Okay. Got a question I'm sure that you are the man for. I just moved from San Diego to Temecula, and they have the...
By the way, so did the Chargers, there. Apparently. So you're in good company.
Temecula, did they?
Well, no, but they moved north. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I know.
And actually, I understand that our mothership, our parent station, KFI in Los Angeles, is the new San Diego Chargers station. Are they going to call them the L.A. Chargers? Is that what they're going to call them?
I hope not. That has a bad ring to it.
Oh, hey, you're in the Southland now, my friend. You get all right. You moved a little north. You didn't come all the way.
I never like LA. Yeah.
They could have been the Temecula
LA is a one-way trip.
Temecula,
right?
Chargers would have been better, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Halfway.
Oh, no, I'm having Wi-Fi issues.
Yes, sir.
So in my office in Temecula, I got 500/500 rate service with Frontier, which was used to be Verizon, and then. In the home, I just needed 150 over 150. And so they have a router that has a 2.4 and a 5 gigahertz broadcast or whatever you want to call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, those are better. Yeah. The dual band, they call them. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, I'll get there. So I called them because after I stream music to my stereo system at home all day, and it's great. But every hour or so, it cuts itself off. So I keep calling into Frontier, and they say, oh, we'll reset the router. Everything should be fine. They didn't go any further than that. So I finally got a guy the other day there at Frontier who says, oh, yeah, well, don't you know that the 5G is only good for about an hour, and then it'll cut you off. If you hardwire it into it, it's constant 5G. The 2.4 is what you want to hook up to.
And I said, that's wrong. That's not true. That's a lie.
Okay.
That's a guy pretending he knows what he's talking about. I've never heard of such a crazy thing in my life. Wait a minute. He's saying on this router, if you're using the 5 gigahertz, it stops working after an hour?
Because they said it's short. It's only for short term.
Well, I don't know what kind of router they're selling you, but that's not the normal course of events.
Exactly. So here's my idea, and I want to know.
And never ask that guy for his advice again. He's a nitwit.
Well,
you know, this is what you get.
It's happening, though. It is shutting off.
Well, maybe. OK, so maybe that's what Frontier provides you. But that's not how it should work. That's dopey.
It's not what they advertise.
That's dopey. Yeah. Right. You know what? It's overheating or something. That's not how it's supposed to work.
Well, here's my idea. Because the stereo system is way too far from the router, and I don't want to hardwire it all the way over there. My idea was this. Is it possible to hook it up to another hub, hardwire it into the new hub? Wireless hub and get it that way.
Yes. But it'd have to be wireless in between. You can't just plug into the two routers into the cable.
No, I know. I'm talking about the, how would I call that? The new router or
yeah.
the secondary router?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's one way to do it.
It'll do it.
Yeah. There are systems. In fact, probably the system you should try is from Netgear called Orbi, O-R-B-I. It sells in a two-pack. It sells with a You're going to get rid of your cable. Absolutely get rid of that cable modem router, the one that overheats after an hour. You know, just disable it. If they sold you or rent you a modem router, which does both, all you need is the modem part of it. So disable the Wi-Fi router part. In fact, if you could disable the entire router part, I would. And then get an Orbi that plugs into it. The base unit of the Orbi has a couple of extra ports, but so does the satellite unit. There's a second satellite unit, and that connects via a separate high-speed back channel, wireless back channel, to the base unit on the Orbi, and it has its own Ethernet jacks. So you could put that satellite near your stereo, have a switch there, and take the internet connectivity from the satellite unit. A number of these mesh systems do this. This is a kind of a quasi-mesh system from Netgear, but it works quite well. Speed is very good. Coverage is very good. You should be able to go several hundred feet distant. And so that'd be just fine. That'd be just fine. If, you know, there are other ways to do this. There's power line networking. You can put a base unit next to the Fakatka router that you got from Frontier and plug it into the wall and then plug the remote unit into the wall. As long as the power line is continuous in your house. You don't have a breaker box in between the two plugs. It'll go, you know, over the power line. It's not quite as fast as Ethernet, but it's wired. It is a little bit better, and it will work quite well. But I would get whatever that is that they're using that break the 5G stops working after an hour. I would get rid of that thing if you can get that out of the loop somehow. Often, and I would ask Frontier, most cable companies will let you buy your own cable modem. This would be the best solution. Stop renting it. You can get a very good cable modem for around $100. Get one that they say is compatible, and then get this Orbi router, and you'd be so much happier all around. Much, much better way to go. These new mesh routers solve a problem everybody has, which is Wi-Fi's gotten congested, it's noisy, it doesn't work as well as it used to. Maybe it never worked well, we just didn't notice. Almost all of them do both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. Some of them even use multiple bands on 5 gigahertz. I'm using a system from a company called Plume that I like a lot. Plume would also work for you. But it's a little different. The way Plume works is you get one Plume router for every room in your house and maybe for the hallways too. So it can add up. But it makes a little pool of Wi-Fi around it. And each of them plugs into the wall and connects to the base unit, which is plugged into your cable modem. But they all have an Ethernet jack. So those Ethernet jacks are live and can be used, for instance, in the case of your stereo. For your stereo system, you'd still need a switch if you have more than one thing to plug in. I have no idea why the guy said to you that 5 gigahertz is designed for short-term use. That's not true. And it would be a shock, frankly, to all the people like me who use 5 gigahertz routinely. In fact, I recommend 5 gigahertz. It generally is less congested, partly because it's, you know, not all routers support it, but mostly because it doesn't go through walls very well. So it's much less likely your neighbor's 5 gigahertz signal will interfere with your 5 gigahertz signal. So 5 gigahertz is a great choice, especially with these mesh routers that can get you 5 gigahertz in every room. I think that for what you're doing, the Orbi would be a very good choice. That's what I'd recommend from Netgear. These aren't cheap, you know, because you get two units. We're talking about $300 for most of these starter kits, you know. And then you can add additional devices to it. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, it's the GizWiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo. He's not only a funny guy, he's also a collector of oddball gadgets. And he's got one for us. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. We have lots more there about those mesh router systems. I've been covering them for quite a bit for the last few months. I think Dick D knows this song. Do, 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 sing along, everybody, now. I believe in miracles. Where are you from? Mad Magazine's maddest writer. His sexy thing. It's Dick D. Bartolo, and he joins us each and every week. Did you see I have my what? Snapchat spectacles here.
Oh, my word.
Have I worn these for you? I don't know.
No.
These are the ones that take pictures of people. And upload them to Snapchat.
Oh, my gosh.
I found them. And, you know, you have a gadget warehouse where you put old stuff.
Yes.
I have, like, a drawer. I found them in my...
It's easier because I pay $400 a month.
I know.
Your drawer must be, like, what, $2?
Yeah, and it runs out of room real quick, but that's okay because, really, most of these gadgets don't... But you, I don't know, sometimes you come up with something and you go, wow, you know, this was all the rage a few years ago.
Yes.
Maybe
yeah,
I should send
hard
you
to
these.
Throw out.
Yeah.
They're hard,
hard
to throw out.
Do you have one of these? This is the newest. Everybody's talking about these fidget spinners. Somebody stopped by and gave me a fidget spinner.
I have the fidget cube. I don't have the spinner.
Oh. Well, you know, this is frustrating because you see this on TV, and the guy's doing all these tricks with it. I can't do any tricks with it. It doesn't do anything. And then you look carefully on the TV ad and says additional equipment required.
Oh, great.
Like what? Like a wire to hold the thing floating in the air or something. Anyway, what do we have? So I was just proving that I, too, have a few gizmos and gadgets, but nothing like Dickie D. He's the gadget king. What do you have for us today?
Oh, I have a fun gadget from Works, W-O-R-X, Works. They make a little power tools. So at a press event, I saw their new, I don't have one yet, but they said, why don't we send you one? Their new semi-automatic driver tool. Now, what this guy is if you're doing like projects like doing hinges or something where you have to drive a bunch of screws, this is a power driver with a difference. It comes with a little cartridge that holds six drivers, a couple of Phillips, a couple of slot, a couple of hex shanked bits. And every time you retract the trigger and push it forward again, it puts a new driver into.
Because that's the worst part of these cordless, screwdrivers is you got to get a different bit for whatever kind of screw you're going to use.
Yes, and then losing the bits. Even though drivers come with a beautiful plastic case each bit locks into a plastic slot. Yeah. They fall out and you lose them. This way, all six drivers are in the tool. And if you want to replace it, they said that it's a standard one-inch hex driver, so like Home Depot and Lowe's sell their own different ends, so you can customize it to yourself. And actually, that is the older version. So the new version also includes a magnetic retracting screw holder.
Oh, no. So, I bought the old one. All right.
I
need the new one with the
you
magnetic.
You need the new one. X255L, or on my website, it's there too.
If I had just gone to gizwiz.biz.
Yeah, .biz. And,
well, it's only $25 bucks on Amazon. This is inexpensive.
I know, because it's the older version.
Oh. No, this is the 254L. Is that wrong?
No, it is. You need the 255L.
Oh, the 255L.
I don't even see it there because it has.
Oh, yeah, here it is. There's a newer model, $29.99.
This thing,
be careful taking this on the street. You might get shot. It looks like a gun.
Well, in a way, now that I see it sideways.
In a way, it looks like you're in Star Trek. But keep it inside, I guess.
Keep it inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they don't sell the Hoster. Oh, it's even dropped down in price a little.
Yeah, it's not expensive.
It's come down $5
what
bucks.
A clever
already.
Idea.
Yeah.
Oh, and it has a little bit holder there. This is great.
It holds the screw. That's magnetic, and the little extension cord holds long screws. But as you drive it, it pulls back, and then goes under the driver, so you can flush mount the screw.
If I had this, I would do so much more screwing. This is really good.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's for people who are tired of screwing. This is your answer.
Oh, my gosh. You know, my wrists, and it's so hard. And, of course, in technology, you're always putting stuff together, like cases and stuff.
Absolutely.
Great.
Now, they do say, you know, this is like for around the house. It's not for a construction worker or to take out to build a home. It's, you know, it's hinges.
Okay.
And screws.
Yeah. It's the home, your home power screwdriver.
Yeah, exactly. It's lithium battery and also a little LED that also comes on while you're driving a screw.
Dick DiBartolo does it again from Works, WORX, the new semi-automatic driver. Make sure you get the latest.
Yes, 255L.
255L. And you know the best way to do this, go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. Click the, the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy button, and he's got a link right there directly to Amazon, so you can buy it directly right from the website. While you're there, after you order it, come back, though, because you're going to want to play the What the Heck Is It contest.
Yeah, just 2 days.
The end of the month.
Monday.
One day. Tomorrow is the last day to figure out what this gizmo or gadget is. What could that be?
No hints here.
I don't know.
This is the failed prototype of the automatic screwdriver.
It's like a baseball after Derek Jeter got a hold of it or something. I don't know. Like he took some bites out of it. What could that be? So there's 12 Mad Magazines autographed by Dickie D for the right answer, 24 for the best cute, silly answers, and the rules are all available. You'll be winning the June issue.
Oh, that's going to be the June issue.
Of Mad Magazine on the newsstands today and in your pocket tomorrow if you get in there right away and play the What the Heck Is It kind of gizwiz.biz. You can also find his website, his podcast at gizwiz.tv. And, of course, he's here each and every week talking gadgets. Thank you, Dickie D.
Perfect. Okay, pal. See you next week.
See you next week. Last call of the day is Tom in San Dimas, California. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Thanks, man. I heard you talking. I drive a truck for a living, and my life depends on traffic stuff from AM radio. And my question was, is stations like KFI and 1070, they seem to not be as strong as they used to be. And
really?
I'm wondering, has the FCC or has AM radio changed? I mean,
not to my knowledge, they should be just as strong as ever.
I drive at night, and I used to be able to hear stations from San Francisco or 600 and stuff like that. And it now with, I mean, it seems like every time you go into a power line or something, your radio just goes crazy. And I was wondering if they had changed the signal.
Boy, not that I know of, but let me ask the chief engineers. You know that the skip, the way that you hear AM radio over a long distance varies very much with the weather, because it's really skipping as off the atmosphere as it's traveling, because the Earth's curved, right? Normally it would just go off in space, but when the atmosphere is just right, it actually bounces off the atmosphere. It skips off of it, and so you can hear distant stations, but that changes depending, of course, on weather conditions. Yeah. But if you're saying that you can't hear local stations from time to time because of interference, I would guess that's not the stations changing. That's just our modern world making more interference than ever before.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so let me tell you, though, the best traffic solution, you must know Waze, W-A-Z-E, don't you?
Yes.
You got to keep listening to KFI. I'm not going to let you stop, but I use Waze as well, because Waze is crowdsourced traffic information. I don't know. I don't drive for a living. Do you find that useful?
I wish it would update once you select a route.
Yeah.
It seems to keep you on that route.
Right. Yeah.
I want it.
We got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. I'll talk to you off the air. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time. So you don't find ways to be useful then?
It helps you find a route.
Right.
But I want something that,
up to date.
My deal is I drive from, Irwindale to LAX every day, several times a day, and there's times that it might be faster to go the 7-10 as opposed, and it never changes unless I ask it to.
Okay, so that's not good. Now, you could also try listening on iHeartRadio, because then you'd be, instead of listening through the airwaves, you'd be listening to an internet stream, which would be more reliable. Have you tried iHeartRadio?
I have not. I mean, I know, because there's so many great podcasts and stuff that I would find.
So KFI, KNX is probably on, the CBS has a different application, so you'd have to have a CBS application for KNX. But if you like KFI's traffic reports, they're on iHeartRadio. And that is a great app to get. You should absolutely get that app, because you get all of that, and you wouldn't be affected in any way by interference with that. That should work your whole route, as long as you can get, cellular reception.
Right, right.
Now, somebody's telling me that the sunspot cycle is at a low part of the cycle. And is that good for Skip? N6 IBI is a ham. Is that good for Skip, or is that bad for Skip to have the sunspots be low? I would think that'd be good for Skip, but I don't know. So he's a ham. He would know. And let me ask you, a ham would know very well. Oh, there are no local traffic updates on iHeartRadio. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. Yeah, because they figure you're not listening locally, huh? They want you to listen to the radio.
Right.
Yeah, they put in a Car for Kids ad instead. That's no good.
It's horrible.
Oh, that's Sybil.
That's my worst, my least favorite commercial in the whole world.
I know. 1-800.
Please stop.
Maybe your antenna came loose or something. Let me ask Sybil. Sybil's a ham. So are radio stations not as good as they used to be? I think they're probably the same. Unless they were told to change. Huh. I wonder if maybe your antenna came loose on your cab.
Well, I moved from truck to truck. And I mean, and I'm talking in my passenger car or whatever. I know that KFI had a huge antenna years ago come down that they weren't allowed to put back
up. That's right. We did lose that antenna. Yeah, that's right.
You know, but I just, it's in 870 KIEV and stuff. They just come in so weak where they used to all be powerhouses.
Boy, I'm going to have to ask the chief and see what's going on. I would. But you're right about that. But that was 10 years ago. That KFI antenna.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you don't get. I drive late at night all night long.
I would guess that you're
able to hear San Francisco and all of those things, and you're not getting.
I know hams anymore. Complain, and I think this is the case. The cities are getting noisier. You know, neon is terrible for interference. As the infrastructure gets older, things like those big junction boxes, those big transformers, they get noisier. The power lines get noisier. I would bet you it's just aging infrastructure is making more noise and increased use of noisy devices like computers and neon signs and things like that.
Interesting. Okay, I can buy that.
Yeah. But you know, let me ask the chief engineer because they would know.
Okay. And I love your show, man.
Thank you.
Every weekend, you know, every chance
Do you listen while you're working?
Oh, no, because I'm off Saturdays and Sundays nowadays. I'm loving this. But I would hear it when I was...
Yeah.
When I did work weekends.
Good.
I would do my best.
Good. Well, I'm glad you listen. I really appreciate it. And listen next time. I'll see if I can get an answer for you.
Okay, and I'll tell you the fun thing is waiting and listening to you online is to hum to the radio when the commercials are on.
Yeah, we don't play those commercials.
Yeah, up close and personal.
Hey, thanks, Tom.